As our time had finished off last week, we were in Genesis 20 looking at one of the stumblings of Abraham, where he struggled with the truth, where he struggled with giving in to his own fears instead of remembering that God was with him wherever he'd go, instead of remembering that God had promised to bless him and to secure him. God had promised him a son, and God had, in fact, well, we don't know exactly how the months fall into place, but maybe we could say a few months ago or so that God had told him, maybe 6 months ago, maybe 8 months ago, 10 months ago, but God had told him that it would be 1 year and that they would have that child, that Sarah would bear that son. So we have all these promises before Abraham, and he recognizes he's a blessed man. He recognizes that no matter what situations would befall them in their life, that he knows that they will safely, he and Sarah will be safe, and they will safely have that child in the coming months. And yet, with all of this knowledge that he has of the promises of God, with all the security that the promises of God provide him with, he falls into his own fears, and he starts stumbling upon himself, and he is afraid as he comes into the area of Gerar, which later would be the people of the Philistines. And he's afraid, and he says that Sarah, his wife, is his sister. He's afraid that harm would befall him if someone saw her and desired to take her as their wife, while it is his wife, that harm would befall him. So that has been the idea. And just a few more notes on this, on the idea, the consequences of sin. We talked a bit about that last week, that the decisions we make in this life, particularly the decisions we make to give in to temptation, or to give in to our fears, give in to wanting to place the burden on ourselves, or take matters into our own hands instead of giving matters over to the Lord, and these kinds of things. Whenever we make those kinds of decisions, they really do have a dramatic impact, and could be a lifelong impact. And so sins are truly destructive, and we are not told that. You know, there is no disclaimer in the temptations that come our way that, look, this is lastingly destructive. You know, this is not a, you know, just something for the day, that, you know, the hour, that, you know, a life or a split second, or, you know, whatever, the list goes on and on. We're not told that, you know, by the temptation, that are you sure you want to make this decision because of how incredibly damaging it's going to be on your relationship with God, how damaging it's going to be on the relationship, you know, with your family or with your spouse or children, you know, what have you, or how damaging it'll be in your relationships with the church, with the brethren, or how damaging it will be with your influence out there in the world. And so, and it's interesting with this example of Abraham. He's actually rebuked by a worldly man, and that he and Sarah in chapter 20. And I think that's a point that we should not miss as we read through the text, to recognize that Abraham and Sarah are rebuked by a person of the world, you know, a person in sinfulness. And even Abraham himself recognized, you know, how unrighteous the nation was in which they were living amongst. And yet he is rebuked by the people of unrighteousness for his sins in which he has done in broad daylight before them all. And so it's it truly is very damaging. So as people of faith, we have a responsibility, not just to ourselves, but we have a responsibility to this church with the way we behave, the way we behave out there in the world. We have a responsibility to the world because it can be tremendously damaging, you know, the way we behave out there. Certainly damaging in terms of any kind of opportunity or potential or influence by which we could help someone come to the to obey the gospel. So Abraham is dealing with that here at this time. And so we have yet another highlight of a failing of the patriarchs, right? Last chapter was Lot's failings and some of his difficulties and the trouble he had and the influences of his family. Now we see another failing of Abraham. And the reality is, when we're looking at this Genesis record, it's kind of surprising how much is focused on the sins, right? And but we shouldn't think of it that way. We should also recognize that it's equally as focused on the faith of these individuals as well. And I think what, as I thought about this whole Genesis record and what God chose to reveal, we have to recognize first the original audience, which was those coming into the promised land. So that was the original audience. And these are people who were pretty much separated from their past. They were separated from their origins pretty well. And, you know, they didn't know a lot of these things, I'm certain. It was for them to understand who they are. It was for them to understand their identity. It was for them to understand that God has been working with them and for them long before they were ever born. It was for them to understand the God's plan and design for them in redemption and the salvation of the whole world. Because about Abraham, he's going to be made a great nation, but what is the intent of being made a great nation? And Israel, you know, coming in to become that great nation in the Exodus, you know, they say, oh, how cool, that's me in the story. I'm that great nation. But the idea of the seed is that all the nations, all the families of the earth would be blessed. And so they realize that the buck doesn't stop here and that there's a continuation here to God's plan of redemption. And it's not just them. It's not just their salvation. It's the salvation of the whole world. Their origins, the origins of the promises of God are found here for them as the original audience. And so what we see with these consequences of sin is interesting. A lot of these things that happen, Israel is finding out here and understanding as they're coming into the promised land, their understanding from reading this Genesis account for the first time, that they're understanding their surroundings and why things are the way that they are. You know, that's why we have the Tower of Babel situation. That's why we have the discussion about Ishmael, you know, Abraham having Ishmael, you know, as far as, you know, his lands, the Arab nation, you know, that's going to be around. And, you know, chapter 19, why did we have to know? Why did we have to know about the horrible thing that happened between Lot and his two daughters? Well, because of Moab and Ammon, the children that would come from these two daughters of Lot, these are going to shape the situations around Israel. And so that's why it's here, you know, predominantly it was originally for them. Now we can learn a lot of wonderful things here, a lot of good applications, but this was originally for them. One last note here on some of these background things that I've been thinking about is what we find in the Genesis record is the information about the stumblings, the fallings, the lack of faith, and how this changes the course of history completely. How by the lack of faith of Abraham, the Arab nation was born out of Ishmael. out of the lack of, you know, the troubles of influence and Lot choosing to raise his children in such a really terrible, vile influence of a place, we have his daughters acting incredibly wickedly. And here you have the whole nations of Ammon and the nations of Moab. So, and these are going to be nothing but trouble for the Israelites. And we see the consequences of sin building up and continuing years and years for hundreds and hundreds of years, even thousands of years. It's so fascinating. It's scary to think about this way. But these sins of Abraham, these failings, shaped the surroundings of the world for Israel. That's why they needed to know about the sins of Abraham. That's one of the reasons anyway. Secondly, we see what else shapes the world and shapes our life and changes the course of all things, and that is our actions of faith. So just as sin has tremendously damaging effects that can go on and on and on like a snowball, so does our faith. Because that's what else is highlighted in these chapters, where we see, you know, Abraham, he didn't have to leave Babylonia. He didn't have to leave, you know, Ur of the Chaldeans. But by faith, he got up and he left. And that started everything. That has even something to do with us here today as Christians. The step of faith that Abraham took out of Ur of the Chaldeans has an effect upon us, and we are part of the result of that step. One action, one step by that man. And so we're looking at these highlights of their life, and you see their faith, you see their failings, both of which have altered the course of all nations and all men. So we've got to think about that when we make decisions based on faith, as well as when we make decisions based on faithlessness. So Abraham here is another example of his failings. He gives in to his fear. Even though he has the promises of God, what happened? He couldn't apply them. You know, something happened there in his life at this moment. And he knows the promises of God. He knows that God has promised to bless him, to keep him safe, that in the coming months he and Sarah would have that child and everything would be fine. And Abraham, what is he thinking? He's thinking, I might die if I don't lie in this situation. I'm going to die. That's not even possible, Abraham. I mean, That is contrary to the promises of God there. It is not possible. So when you look at this, we see that Abraham has the same problem that you and I oftentimes have, is when we're hit with something in our day-to-day life, we all know the promises of God. And we all know how to be faithful to them. And then we're hit with something in our everyday life. We weren't expecting it. Obviously, we weren't expecting it. And we have trouble in that time, in that moment, in that day, we have trouble applying what we know. We have trouble applying the promises of God to that situation, and we decide to take over instead of continuing to allow the Lord to take control. We have similar promises as that given to Abraham. You know, God has said, I'll never leave you, I'll never forsake you. That's what he has told every disciple of Christ. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. And then in our day-to-day walk, we feel alone, you know. We feel like we don't have anyone on our side. We don't have anyone to help us, when in reality, we have the greatest helper and the most able and capable of helpers with us. So, what happens here? But remember, God had told Abimelech in the dream, because Abimelech had taken Sarah to be his wife, and God had told him, that's another man's wife, and that man's a prophet. If you continue with this woman, you will die. If you continue, that'll be your consequence. Now that you know that she is another man's wife, you will die if you continue with her. So verse 8 says, so Abimelech rose early in the morning, called all his servants and told all these things in their hearing, and the men were very much afraid. And Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, what have you done to us? How have I offended you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Look at the rebuke. Abraham, you have brought great sin upon us. Could you imagine being Abraham at this moment? Because here he's been looking at this people and he says, they're so unrighteous. You know, they're so terrible people. And he's being rebuked by them. Abraham, you're terrible. Look what you've done to us. So a great sin. He says, you have done deeds to me that ought not to be done. How shameful that would have been for Abraham to hear that. Verse 10, then Abimelech said to Abraham, what did you have in view that you have done this thing? And Abraham said, because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place. So there's Abraham's view of the people. There's no fear of God here. They don't follow after God. They don't follow after righteousness. Fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife. Which is totally contrary to the promise of God. Verse 12, but indeed she is truly my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. She is, and she became my wife. It's like, Abraham, why are you even trying? I mean, you have been totally caught here. He's like, she is truly my sister. Well, she's truly your wife, you know. And yeah, she's your stepsister, you know, in reality.
Half-sister.
But, huh?
Half-sister.
Yeah, half-sister. Sorry. Half-sister in reality. But, you know, when I hear him making this statement like that, she really is my sister. I didn't, you know, it's like I didn't lie. Well, you know, what do you call it? I mean, you have completely deceived these people to the extent that they have taken away your wife because all you've said is she's my sister. No, she's your wife. So it's fascinating here that as Abraham has been caught in his deceit, that he tries to make this really silly play here. You know, this is his next move, and it's just wrong. You know, he should have hung his head. He should have confessed. But of course, we can pick him apart. But how often do we want to do this, or how often have we done this? You know, when we've been kind of, someone's catching us in something. No, we're trying to explain it away or what have you. So, you know, it's ridiculous, but it's also in our nature. This, we do it too. Let's see. Verse 13, and it came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, this is your kindness that you should do for me in every place, wherever you go, say to me, he is my brother. All right, so this has been planned all along. And that's why it makes a little bit more sense to us now, because this happened a long time ago before, too, that we read earlier in the text. What was it, chapter 12 or 13, I think. So this has happened before. Here it is happening again. It's like, why is this happening again? I mean, this shouldn't have happened. He was rebuked for it the first time. Why is it happening again? And still we have right to say that. Why? You know, why? This should have been corrected. But we're seeing here that this was their game plan. This is what they're going to go out and do. And so they've stuck with their plan. All right. Instead of God's plan, instead of just trusting God, knowing that God was going to deliver them, keep them safe as He always had delivered them, always kept them safe, God would handle this situation as well. And yet, I mean, God promised a great nation to come from the womb of Sarah. No child yet. So, Abraham, you're going to make it through this trip to, you know, Gerar. You know, you're going to be safe, clearly, according to the promises of God. So, Verse 14, then Abimelech took sheep, oxen, and male and female servants and gave them to Abraham, and he restored Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, see, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you. Then to Sarah he said, behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Indeed, this vindicates you before all who are with you and before everybody. Thus she was rebuked. I don't know how he meant this, but obviously he meant it as a rebuke. But, you know, I find it kind of comical that he says, you know, what did he say? Behold, I have given your brother. You know, I've given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Now I've given your husband. And again, I don't know, his intent there. To me, when I read it, it kind of makes me chuckle a little bit. So she is rebuked. Abraham's been rebuked. Sarah is rebuked. Verse 17, so Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, his wife, and his female servants. Then they bore children, for the Lord had closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. So everything is good again for Abimelech and all of his people. But they had fallen under some very difficult, health situations while Sarah remained in that house. And we know the result when if she had stayed, is God had told him that you will surely die. So, and it wasn't just him that would die, but his whole family would die off, and everything would be gone. His kingship and that family of rule would be gone. So, questions, comments about chapter 20 before we move on to 21? So in 21, verse 1, notice the connective word here, and, the conjunction, and. So let's remember that we're not just, starting a new, completely new thing, as we think of chapters and chapter books, they're whole sections, different sections, but that's not the way that we find it in the Word of God. So, and it says, and the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. Now, when you read this, we see that there is an extraordinarily strong emphasis that God is giving out here in these two sentences or so. Notice again how it connects with the word and. So this is what's going on. Abraham is feared for his life. He thinks, he's worried about all, the ungodliness, the world around him. He's concerned about what they're going to do to him and everything like that. He shouldn't have done that. He should have remained on the promises of God. And notice how 21 begins with, and the Lord visited Sarah as he had said. Right? So here we're jumping back to a reminder here that the promises of God stand. And this word and shows the connection, and it definitely shows that contrast between what has been going on in chapter 20 and the lack of faith in God's promises. For that moment, for that situation, they had lost faith in those promises. And then we see this connection. But God visited Sarah as he had said. Look at this emphasis here. It says, the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken. I mean, that's repetition, What is the point of that repetition in the same sentence? He says the same exact thing in the same sentence. Then notice verse 2. For Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. So we got two sentences here, and three times God is showing, I'm doing my promises, you know? I'm doing what I say. And so look at this contrast from 20 to 21. It's just astounding. And it reminds us of several things. Number one, when God has made a promise, He's going to do it, you know? And so that can really be a good thing for us when we have times of fault and have times of failure and times of slipping. You know, God hasn't just thrown His arms up and say, well, you know, I'm just done with it. You know, I'm done with everything that I've said. You know, we've seen Abraham go through life and, oh, he's doing better. He's getting more mature. And, you know, then he falls again. But God remains faithful, right? So even if no one else is faithful, God remains faithful, you know. And in fact, that's what one of the points that Paul makes to the Romans. And it's just an excellent reminder that God doesn't need people to have their faith in Him in order for Him to be faithful. That is what He is going to do no matter what. And so what He says stands no matter what. So it's in moments of our strong faith, it is a wonderful reassurance to recognize how absolute God is in what He says, in His promises. In moments of falling and coming back to Him, it is wonderful encouragement and assurance to recognize that although we've fallen and here we come back to Him, He is absolute in what He says. And if He says He will forgive us, forgive all who come to Him, repent of their sins, confess in Him, then we'll be forgiven. And we recognize our forgiveness by faith. That's what this life is all about. You know, when we come out of the water of baptism, how do we know that our sins have been completely removed from us? Faith. You know? There's, you know, no special halo floating around our head from now on. We recognize by faith what God has done for us because we have acted in accordance with His word and obedience. We've been faithful to Him. So, where are we at here? Okay, so God has spoken. So verse 3, and Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. Then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now, Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him, and Sarah said, God has made me laugh, and all who hear will laugh with me. She also said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children, for I have borne him a son in his old age. So here we have Abraham at 100 years old on the mark. Sarah is at 90 years old. And here they are having this child. And, you know, it's so fantastic in God's time. You know, Ecclesiastes 3, He makes all things beautiful in His time. And you look at God's time, and we've kind of been on this journey with Abraham and Sarah. You know, for those who have been through this whole class going through, it's been a journey through the years, and we've got to remind ourselves as we go chapter to chapter that many years can transpire even between each chapter, and it has been a long time. I didn't go back to do the math. I know we've talked about it before, but you know, I forgot. But it has been so many years since God had told them first that they would have a seed. And time went on, and Sarah's getting old. Sarah's always been barren for one thing, but she's getting older and older for another thing. She, you know, she's well past, you know, those menopause years and all those kinds of things. And then they start taking matters into their own hands, right? They say, here's Hagar, your bondwoman. You know, she will have Abraham's seed. And she has Ishmael. And then God says, no, that's not what I said. That is not what I intended. And then he still doesn't provide it right then. You know, he just doesn't serve it up on a platter immediately after he tells them. And so they have to go through so many years of testing, right? And, you know, this is, here we are once again. This is us. We, you know, of course, we haven't been promised a seed or anything, but, you know, we have been promised, you know, an eternal life with God and in a place outside of this world. And we have to go through the years, you know, and we have those really low points and those points of struggle and those points of troubling times with our faith. And so we read about Abraham and Sarah, and it's a really good reminder to us that we recognize we're going to have times where we are definitely not at our best, but we cannot walk away because God will make it happen in His time, not our time. Usually never equates to our time. So we all know that in our experiences of life. So here they are, you know, and they're laughing. Of course, they've been laughing about this for a while now, right? They've been laughing at this idea of having this child. It's just, it's humorous to them and to all around them. And so they have Isaac. Now,
you mentioned it. You've done this for years. You go back to chapter 12 after when they were in Haran, and his father died, Terah. Did God appear to him and told him to get you and your family out of this land? You know, he was 75 years old at that time.
75.
So he appeared to him at 99 and told him he would have a son. Mm-hmm. He told him what it caused. It's not like Abraham come up with his name because he was told what to call it.
Right.
Which basically means laughter.
Laughter. Yes, absolutely. And God had pinned that down. But I'm glad you went back and looked at the years on that. So 25 years from a man who was already old. All right. Already, you know, beyond the years of bearing children, he and Sarah. He waits another 25 years. So, it's just tremendous. All right, now, we've only got about 2 minutes or so. It's kind of unfortunate. I guess we can do a little bit of this. So in verse 8, so the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the same day that Isaac was weaned. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, scoffing. Therefore she said to Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son, For the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, namely with Isaac. And the matter was very displeasing in Abraham's sight because of his son. So you have Ishmael here, and he is, I think he's, what, 13? Maybe 12, 13, I think. And, you know, Abraham's displeased with this matter. It says because of his son, because of Ishmael. You know, it's his son. You know, it's his young teenager, and, you know, we understand that. But Sarah was, she sees Hagar scoffing, right? And it's interesting that once again the emphasis is Hagar the Egyptian. What a fascinating emphasis. And we talked about that when we first, you know, it were introduced with Hagar and this interesting situation of you know, Israel, you know, Abraham, you know, having that relationship with the Egyptian. You know, remember the original recipients were those who came out of the Exodus, all right? This is the brand new nation of Israel. And so think about this, when this was fresh ink and they were reading this, and it says, Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian. What connections do they have in their mind with that, you know? Hagar the Egyptian, you know, they just spent their entire life in bondage, you know, in Egypt, in slavery in Egypt. So, you know, it's fascinating that these people that come into Abraham's life, there's some foreshadowing here of trouble, you know, that is to come because of, you know, the troubles that Abraham and Sarah, you know, get themselves into. And they definitely get themselves into a lot of trouble here with this Egyptian. So she has that Ishmael. And notice what she is doing. She is scoffing, all right? She's persecuting. So this is, you know, the first persecutor. This is what Paul had talked about. This is why this is really important. Well, we're out of time, aren't we? Okay, see, this is why I was didn't want to get into this. Anyway, this goes into the New Testament. I mean, this with that little statement there, this whole idea of the Egyptian persecution, how the New Testament says it really started with Isaac. It didn't start way yonder. It started with Isaac. It started in the days of Abraham.